VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. Certainly troubling times in which we live, and a lot going on here across the nation. We are seeking right now to be in contact with the Center for Immigration Studies with a report from the border and learn some of the matters that are going on. Matter of fact, if you want to try our guest at our first number again, we will try and reach out there again here. But just want to bring you up to date on a couple other issues that are taking place at this time. Number one, we find that what's going on with China is very, very concerning. This from Western Journalism, the country that President Joe Biden once said couldn't eat our lunch is readying right now a hypersonic drone that would take out our most advanced fighter planes, the South China Morning Post reported. According to the report from the Hong Kong-based outlet, Chinese military researchers have found a way to safely land unmanned aircraft flying at over five times the speed of sound, bringing them closer to potentially neutralizing American air superiority. And we know that the issues going on with China right now are of great concern as they are building their readiness, their military, their exercises that are going on. And at the same time, we find that the United States military is more concerned about critical race theory and diversity training as well. So I know our trust is not in our military, some trust in horses, some in chariots. We will remember the name of the Lord our God, but certainly the aspect of having a strong national defense is very important for our nation. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's amazing to see the collapse of our nation's border security in less than 8 months' time. Somehow, individuals from all around the world are entering the United States through our southwest border. And in the process, it is not criminal aliens being vilified. Rather, it's our own border agents that are coming under great scrutiny, even from the President of the United States. Well, our guest today has recently been at the border observing what is taking place and will be reporting without the politically correct filters of the media. Joining us today, we'd like to welcome Todd Benzman, Senior National Security Fellow with the Center for Immigration Studies. He's the author of America's Covert Border War, the untold story of the nation's battle to prevent jihadist infiltration. Todd, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Todd, you are fresh from the border, and we want your firsthand account today, but I'd like you to tell us first, what was the state of the border on the last day of the Trump presidency? And we're going to compare that to what's taking place now. But take us back, if you would, to noontime, January 20th, 2021. What was the condition of the border at that time?
Well, during the last year of the Trump administration, which is a little bit slanted because of the pandemic-related border closures, all the way down the line. But even before the pandemic, the numbers that were coming across the border were maybe like 30,000, 20,000, 30,000 a month, which is still seems high to a lot of people, but not compared to 250,000 a month now. And he was helped along in the final, you know, from March 2020 on by the pandemic closures. But the truth is that for a year prior to that, his policies remain in Mexico and safe third country asylum rules and deportation by air and all of these different kinds of policies had this tremendous impact on reducing the last mass migration crisis that we had back in early 2019. He had pretty much eliminated that, and it felt like the border was under control.
Now, you have just returned from the border. You've had a firsthand look. What did you observe?
Right. I've spent much of this year since the inauguration on the border, different parts of the border. This last trip was to the Del Rio migrant encampment that formed right after September 12, September 13, right in that area. And that was something that was a really unusual, really in American history, just because so many people pooled up in one spot and they couldn't just let them all run through. So you had a unusual visual, I'll just say that. And that visual became a political canker sore, I guess, for the Biden administration that had to be eliminated quickly. But I will point out that, and I mean, it was very much like a third world country. I've been to real refugee camps in Africa and the Balkans and elsewhere, and it really reminded me of that. I mean, it was remarkable. People were building thatched dwellings and sleeping on the ground,
wow.
And, you know, it was filthy and smelly and hot and babies crying and people in all sorts of physical conditions, but it was entirely unnecessary, all of it. And if I could just add one thing, there were 15,000 people in that camp, which is a typical Texas breakfast hour these days. That's nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. I know it attracted a lot of media attention, but we have 50,000 people a week crossing that border, and they've been crossing for months like that, at that level, with no media.
I know the whole aspect of how this visually looked to the American people was such that was an embarrassment to the Biden administration. I mean, the Trump administration had been criticized when a fraction of that number, had encamped under the bridge. But now, of course, there is the situation in which the Biden administration and even the FAA, we understand, ordered the stopping of drones. The news media had drones that were flying overhead, and they closed the airspace for a time, of which then they had to go up in helicopters. I mean, this was a huge embarrassment. Did not want the American people to know or see what was happening at this Del Rio sector.
They tried to get away with ignoring this into oblivion for as many days as they could. When I first got on the ground, it was still fairly fresh and growing, and the city of Del Rio, I'm talking about the municipality of Del Rio, was the one that held a big press conference with the county sheriff. So you had the mayor of this little town of 35,000 holding a press conference and holding forth on large federal issues of immigration policy. It was absurd. And I asked, where is DHS? I appreciate you guys all being here, but why are you here and not the Department of Homeland Security and somebody from the White House? And they said, we have the same question.
Wow.
We feel abandoned.
Tell us about the Haitians at the border. I mean, how did they get there? You look at a map, and Haiti's part of an island southeast of Cuba, far closer to Miami, Florida, than Del Rio, Texas. How are they getting there?
Well, the main thing to keep in mind about the southern border is that immigrants from 120, 130 countries have access to migration routes through South America, Central America, all the way to the southern border, and every year, forever, have been crossing over there. And Haitians are really no different. They fly into countries like Ecuador and Brazil, and then they get onto the routes. Now, one common misperception about these Haitians is that they're coming from Haiti. They are not. None of them are coming from Haiti. They have been living in Chile, in Brazil, for anywhere from 3 to 7 years, and have been living in prosperity, relative prosperity, to Haiti, and with residency permits and work authorization generously provided by those governments, which were appreciative of having the labor for their very strong economies. And what happened was they were sort of riding out the Trump border, which was very difficult to get across and to stay in, waiting for Democrats to get in. They told me that. I've interviewed many, many dozens of Haitians from Chile, and they explained to you that they saw that the Biden was opening the border and their smuggling money was going to pay off. So that's when they hit the trigger. And all of these people decided to upgrade their already pretty good lives in Chile and Brazil for a better one in the United States. You know, we have, 24-hour all-you-can-eat buffets here, you know.
So they actually came because they felt that the welcome mat had been laid down by Mr. Biden for them to come to the U.S. and enter illegally?
That's what they tell me in interview after interview after interview over many, many months. I've been interviewing Haitians for a year now, long before this thing happened. And in other countries, I was just in Costa Rica on the international trail there at Nicaragua border. I've been in Panama interviewing Haitians there, and it's always the same story. They're coming through because they figured the border was open.
My.
And they'll tell you that. All anybody has to do is ask.
Mm-hmm.
We were just waiting for, because the thing about immigrants moving to the southern border is the only thing that really matters is that there is a payoff, a return on investment for the smuggling fees that they will pay to get over. They do not want to spend $8,000, $7,000, $6,000 to get all the way from Chile and Brazil and then be turned around and flown back to Haiti or be returned to Mexico and not let in under the pandemic. But they heard that the Biden administration, it was true, was allowing family units in by the tens of thousands, letting them right in on and legalizing them very quickly within 48 hours, 72 hours, they were on buses into the American interior with legal papers. And that sort of a piece of news gets around the entire world, and everybody runs and comes for that. And that's why we have this mass migration. I don't know why the Biden administration and people on the liberal part of the divide can't understand that. It's just so conventionally obvious.
Yeah.
That's how this works.
So they're not coming as refugees. I mean, they were living well in Chile or Brazil or other locations, but somehow they come here because life is going to be better?
Yeah, they're going to apply for asylum on grounds that they can't be returned to Chile, leaving out the on grounds that they can't be returned to Haiti, because there were earthquakes and a political assassination.
Right.
But what they do is they, in order to have even a remote chance at American asylum, they dump their ID cards on the Mexican side of the riverbank so that they don't get outed as having already been domiciled in a safe third country.
Tell you what, we got a break. We got to take a 60-second break, a one-minute break here. Todd Bensman is with us, Senior National Security Fellow with the Center for Immigration Studies. You're listening to Crosstalk. We'll be right back.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, why is helium so much lighter than the other gases?
Chris, helium is lighter because it's a smaller atom, far smaller than any other gas except hydrogen. There's a very interesting lesson we can learn from this. We know how many atoms of helium are out there from a direct observation. We also know how fast helium is produced below the Earth's surface and how fast it enters the atmosphere. By doing simple division, we can see that all of the helium that's in the atmosphere would get here in a rather short period of time, far too short to have allowed for evolution to occur. Once again, Chris, we see that the scientific evidence supports the biblical way of thinking and not the evolution way of thinking. Back to Genesis wins again.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY American Network. Todd Bensman is with us today, Senior National Security Fellow with the Center for Immigration Studies. Folks, he is just coming fresh from the border with a report as to what's taking on and the number of Haitians there that has been growing. And there's really some kind of mixed reactions or question marks here, Todd, as it relates to where the Haitians are going. We're with the numbers going down, are they going back into Mexico, or are they being sent, flown back home, or are they coming into the United States, or is it a combination of all of the above?
It's a combination. For one thing, the camp is liquidated now. Bulldozers are under there scraping it all clean. So all of them are gone, and that was really the point of the DHS operation.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real political blot and problem that for the Biden administration, because it was just so visible and so terrible. And it looked like it was going to last for weeks and weeks. So they really put together a plan to liquidate this thing as soon as humanly possible. And what they wound up doing was defaulting to an uncharacteristic Trump-era policy that was to repatriate by ICE air Haitians all the way back to the island of Haiti, where none of these people have lived in years and years. And what that did was create a real deterring fear among the immigrants that were in the Texas camp. And about 5,000, by my analytical reckoning, fled that camp back into Mexico. And I actually spent a lot of time with those who fled, who were explaining to me why they fled. They absolutely were repelled to their core by the idea that they could get flown back to the tarmac in Port-au-Prince. And there were several thousand that did get flown back. The Biden administration did have flight after flight after flight right from the camp to Haiti, and those people, when they landed, would text their friends and family back in the camp saying, "You'll never believe where I am. They sent me back to Haiti. Don't get on the bus. Run." And they showed me these texts, so, I mean, that's how it works, and a whole lot of them just left and went back into Mexico waiting for, they said, Biden to get tired of this repatriation policy, and which is a Trump policy, by the way, showing how desperate they were to get rid of this camp and how knowledgeably mm-hmm. they used this, knowing it would work.
Yeah, and that's what it points out here, Todd. It was the effectiveness of the Trump policy in that regard. I mean, it was a deterrent.
It was. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, I went to the bus station in Acuña, Ciudad Acuña, which is right across the river from Del Rio, and it was just filled with Haitians buying tickets to southern Mexico where they came from, and boarding, you know, bus after bus after bus, where just days earlier, bus after bus after bus was arriving at this station and disgorging loads of Haitians who walked straight down to the river. That's how starkly contrasting it was. Like, I mean, it was like flipping a switch. And so that's one thing. And then a whole lot of others, though, were paroled into the United States. I think somewhere in the order of 6,500, 7,000 of them were just given legalization, temporary residence, and sent into the interior of the nation to pursue asylum applications at some point in the next 3 or 4 months, none of whom are eligible for asylum because they've been living firmly resettled in Chile and Brazil. But like I mentioned earlier, they throw their cards away and all evidence that they had lived in Chile so that when they get up in front of an immigration judge, they'll just say, "I can't go back to Haiti. They killed the president. There's political violence." And by the way, I found these cards littered along the Mexican side of the bank and collected them.
Really?
Took photos of them, just abandoned ID cards. put them up on social media, and I brought probably 100 of them back. I've got a bag right next to me filled with Chilean identity cards. I don't know what I'm going to do with them, but I got a bag.
Wow.
If he wants any.
You know, this is rather amazing. Now, we also had seen some reports of buses being hijacked in the area. Is that something you can vouch for? Did that happen?
Yes, it did, and much more than that. And that goes back to this incredible reaction against the repatriation flight program. What was happening, according to the Haitians that I interviewed, is the ones that were sent back to Haiti did not know that they were being sent to Haiti, and so until they were in midair. So when they landed, finally, they started texting, "Don't get on the buses, don't get on the buses, run, because the buses are taking you to the airport, and you're going to end up like us back in Haiti." And at that moment is when violence broke out on these buses, and they hijacked a couple of them at least. And there were a lot of other instances of violent attacks on Border Patrol office agents and ICE agents. They had to have extra security. They had to bring in special buses where the driver was caged in. They had to put extra bodies guys with badges and guns on these things, because it was that kind of a deterrent. It really, repatriation just stopped. Not one more immigrant went into that camp after they did that, and 5,000 left.
Wow.
They knew that it would work. They knew it would work like that.
Let's get to the horseback riders as well, the border agents. I mean, we've seen some of the video footage from there, and, of course, there's a lot of notable names in Congress, and even the president talking about the whips, and migrants are being whipped. I mean, just giving that narrative, we understand the photographer who took that said, that, no, that's not what happened at all. Set us straight, set the American people straight on what was happening with the border agents on horseback.
Well, I'll tell you, as a journalist of 23 years and an intelligence analyst of another 10 years in government, I tend to want to go with primary sources, the guys who were there, and especially the photographer. His testimony carries the most weight of anybody. And I just don't, I can't help but believe with how partisan the country is right now that liberal Democrats in this country are very hungry for any distracting bit of something that says, look over here, pay attention to this other thing, this shadow dance, this shadow puppets thing going on over here. Don't look at the fact that 50,000 immigrants a week are crossing this border, and this is what they look like and how they do it and how we're letting them all in, or a great many of them in. That's all it is.
Hmm. Nobody was being whipped?
According to the photographer, those reins never touched anyone. And I've talked to some Border Patrol agents. The ones that I talked to were not on horse patrol. I did try to get some on background, but they're so scared right now they wouldn't take a chance. But the Border Patrol agents that I did talk to said that those guys go through training for close quarters crowd control, and that they twirl those reins around as a means to make sure that their horse does not trample or kick a pedestrian who is being sort of violent and pushy and shovey. So it's a tactical thing that they do in order to keep distance for the sake of the protester or the person who's being controlled in the crowd, to not get stomped or their foot broken or kicked or something by the horse.
At the same time, the president really has wasted no time denigrating these Border Patrol agents, the horse patrols, et cetera. What is the morale of border agents right now, the morale of ICE agents?
Well, all year long, since they started allowing 600,000 people to just illegally cross the border and gain legal access to the country, those that rewards, Border Patrol morale has been just utterly in the toilet. I mean, I talk to them all the time. I spend a lot of time with them. Late at night, you can find them out there in the field, and you can drive up and roll the window down and have a lifelong talk with them. It's lonely out there, and they'll talk. And it is just awful that they are not being allowed to do what they were trained to do, which is to interdict, block, arrest, detain. Yeah, they're cops. You know, they're badge-carrying, gun-toting cops, essentially. And imagine, like, a unit of U.S. Marines or something not being allowed to fight a war or something. You know, they don't like peacekeeping missions, Marines. And these guys have been turned into Walmart greeters. But having said that, what's happened over this horse thing is utter rage. I have never seen such furious anger. They are mad. They are filled with hatred right now for their president and for that whole administration. It is at a high red zone. I want to say 20 minutes ago, I had a call from the father of a Border Patrol agent who was asking if I could help get that Border Patrol agent a job with Texas Department of Public Safety, law enforcement here. And I said, I'd try. You know, they just want out. This one wants out now. They can't stand it.
Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin has really grabbed hold of this issue and holding the feet of the Homeland Security Secretary to the fire and pressing him with a very important question. He's asking this: of the approximately 1.3 million apprehensions, how many people have been returned, how many people have been detained, and how many people have been dispersed into the United States? And all the secretary could do is say, I don't know. I don't have that information. I'll get it for you. But,
I saw that.
But you know, time is passing and still no answer as it relates to that. The top person, the secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, you would think would have a vested interest in knowing those numbers, being at the border, observing what's going on, and take control.
Well, the Biden administration understands that the polling, which is showing that this issue is their Achilles heel. It is really damaging this administration, and at every possible turn, if they can evade and suppress and ignore into oblivion this whole matter, the more time they can sort of dance around without having to show how horrendous and historically horrendous this is, the better off they'll be in the midterms, the party. So I really think that this is part of a strategy. This did not help them at all to have this thing happen in Del Rio. They were doing okay without that because their partners in the media would not cover the 50,000 a week that are being apprehended down here. Let me just, if I can... Well, I'll let you.
Yeah, let's take the break, and we'll have you come back to whatever thought you're on right now. Todd Bensman with us here today from Center for Immigration Studies. Folks, if you want to see their reporting, go to cis.org, cis.org, and they're nonpartisan, but they'll tell it like it is. I mean, they'll be truthful in their reporting of what's going on at our border, and we'll be back to talk more after the break. This is Crosstalk.
Babylon is mentioned nearly 300 times in Scripture, from Genesis to Revelation. God's end-time program for Babylon has its roots in the historical account of the Tower of Babel. Their leader Nimrod, whose name means rebellion or revolt, led the people in defiance against God, pursuing what he saw as a new world order. In the book Babylon, the bookends of prophetic history, author Dr. Andy Woods reveals it's not only the old Babylon that pursued such a path, but believes the scriptural evidence points to the new Babylon that will be rebuilt as the headquarters of the Antichrist, will serve as a political authority over the earth, and the future seat of global religious authority. He examines the scriptures that call for a futuristic, literal Babylon in God's end times program. Copies of Babylon are available for a donation of $16 when you call 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Our topic today, from border control to border chaos. And Todd is with the Center for Immigration Studies. He did recently author the book America's Covert Border Wall, War, that is, the untold story of the nation's battle to prevent jihadist infiltration. We'll get into part of that here in just a moment. But Todd, as we resume, just before the break, you were going to tell us something about a concept called gotaways. So tell us about it.
Sure. Well, everybody knows that once a month maybe not everybody, but I'll just say that the DHS puts out a report on apprehensions at the border, southern border, and it's been an escalating step climbing sort of number since the Biden administration took office, that's peaking out at about 210,000 a month. And those are the ones that are known encounters, where there is an actual interaction between an immigrant and a Border Patrol agent. Those numbers are huge. We're looking at about 1.7 million by the end of the year. It should be a historic high for the country, never before that many, and in a year. But there is a category called gotaways. It's official government nomenclature for immigrants who were noticed in one form or another, but who did not get caught. So it could be footprints in the dirt. It could be a video surveillance shot or some video, or somebody spotted them from a helicopter. And those get reported into CBP and counted. And I just want to point out that in addition to the 200,000 known apprehensions every month, there are probably about 50,000 more gotaways counted like that.
Wow.
Now, that number is going to be low, 50,000, because there are no Border Patrol agents on the line these days to even count them, because they're so busy doing Walmart greeting duty, processing immigrants in that are being allowed in. So the numbers have got to be probably twice that, at least, every month, people just coming through and getting through to take advantage of the fact that there is no deportation anywhere in the country anymore.
Right. I want to talk about Texas' response, too, just a bit here. They've been implementing something called Operation Lone Star, where the governor of Texas, Abbott, is just saying enough is enough, and he's been taking some actions. Can you comment on what he's been doing in Texas?
Yes, I've embedded with DPS. I've been up in their helicopters and on the ground with their troops and at night with their special response teams. And they are doing an incredible job down there and filling the voids that are left in the line by the Border Patrol diversion into Walmart greeter duty and processing duty. So a lot of what they're doing is apprehending and interdicting and deterring drug smuggling and weapons smuggling and the movement of serious criminal aliens who don't want to get caught. And they are catching those people and plugging the holes and doing a great job at that and catching a lot of drug smugglers and seizing a lot of drugs. But the other thing that's really interesting, new and different, that the state is doing is that for example, in the Del Rio sector, they are making arrests of illegal immigrants and charging them with state crimes, like illegal trespassing, criminal trespassing onto private ranch lands, child endangerment, and fleeing on foot. And these get the immigrants jammed up in the legal system and prevent them from cleanly gaining other kinds of immigration benefits because they have this record. It's a big deterrent. They've arrested over 1,000 for criminal trespass in just the Del Rio sector in the last few weeks. And those cases are making their way through local district attorney courts. And they plan to expand on that and really start. They're also building walling with state funds, and they're raising more state funds to just try to finish the wall at some point. But right now they're putting up whatever they can to block access to the interior. And those things work.
Yeah, and folks, is it any wonder why George Soros is putting so much money into having local DAs elected in their various elections? Just think about the scenario here. By the way, we're going to open our lines here where you can ask your questions of our guest, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Todd, from the title of the book you have authored, America's Covert Border War, The Untold Story of the Nation's Battle to Prevent Jihadist Infiltration. I understand you have got concern about jihadist infiltration across the border. Are jihadis gaining access? Are they part of these gotaways that you just spoke about? Are they having access to our nation through our borders? Are they that porous?
Well, there is a steady traffic of people coming from places like Syria and Iraq and Iran and Pakistan, and I might add Afghanistan. All year, every year, not huge numbers, but significant enough numbers that the American Homeland Security establishment has deployed counterterrorism programs all along that border, and especially in Latin America itself, hunting down the smugglers that are bringing those kinds of immigrants over. And they're also tracking potential jihadists. We have every year immigrants from those countries, Yemen most notably recently, who are already on the FBI's terrorism watch list when they reach the border. So we had one, for example, a Yemeni in January cross into California. He was on the terror watch list. We had another one cross in March in Calexico, California, on the terrorism watch list and on the no-fly list. We have had numerous Yemenis coming over that border who are on the other ones, who are on the watch list, also from Pakistan, Somalia, Iraq. We have had quite a few from Afghanistan cross that border, including one just about a year and a half ago named Wasik Ullah. I know his name because I recently wrote about him, who was fired from his job in Afghanistan at Camp Leatherneck for involvement with Taliban intelligence services and then banned from stepping foot on any U.S. base over there. Well, he also was banned from getting a special immigrant visa for life. That's how serious a threat he was. And he just simply came over in Brownsville, Texas.
Wow. Wow. I've seen reports of Russians and Turks coming across the border, too.
I've met Russians. I've met Turks. They're all different kinds from all over the world are coming over. We, thank God, have not had an attack. My book, America's Covert Border War, attributes the lack of attack to the success of these programs that I describe at length for the first time ever. That what we have been doing with jihad and how serious we as a country have been taking that issue. But what the problem is now, and my fears now, I've written about this and I speak about it, is that when the southern border is under this kind of an assault, where the normal management systems are broken and breaking and everything is off the rails, when people from those countries approach the border and get through, they make it into the crowd of gotaways. They get through. They're waved through. They don't get properly vetted. And so I believe that the threat from those kind of immigrants is elevated right now because of this crazy crisis going on down there. So I'm really worried at the moment.
All right, and where is your book available?
America's Covert Border War, available on Amazon or Barnes & Noble and in bookstores, and you can find it online anywhere books are sold.
Okay, and again, that's called America's Covert Border War. Our phone number here at the Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Let's go to Warren in Wisconsin. You're on the air, Warren.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment on what those horsemen down on the border. I'm retired military. I was in the Guards during the the 70s, and I remember Kent State when those guardsmen weren't trained properly. But when we did riot training, we were trained not to allow the crowd to pull us, someone to pull us into the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine what happened if one of those officers got pulled in the crowd and somebody got a hold of their weapons? And
yeah.
You know, training's different in a real situation. I think anybody that's stupid enough to get close enough to a whip to get whipped by it, you know, they're not too smart anyhow.
Warren.
I pray in God's name for the ones that are down there that we don't ever have another Kent State, and thank for the training they are getting.
Well, Warren, thank you so much for your service, and giving that firsthand account. And Todd, you know, he speaks from a position of knowledge as it relates even to the training that one has to go through. Let's appreciate your call. Let's go to Susan next in Clintonville. You're on the air.
Hi, it's Clintonville, but that's okay. I just a little horse not expertise for you. I do have horses, and when you take a lead rope and make a big circle, it makes a really not great sound for the horse, like woo woo woo. And it's usually to back a horse up or to move a horse in a different direction.
Yeah.
So that's what I saw on the radio on the TV. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Susan. Richard, you're next. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hello, Richard.
Yes.
You're on the air.
I had a question.
Richard, you're hitting buttons there. Careful. Go ahead, Richard.
The Supreme Court ruled stay in Mexico. You know, the stay in Mexico, they ruled that the Trump policy could not be, you know, negated by the state. What's going to happen with that?
Hey, okay. Thank you. You're getting a lot of tones there, but he's asking, what about that stay in Mexico policy, Todd, that was under the Trump administration?
Yeah, well, the Supreme Court upheld the ruled against the Biden administration's overturning of that policy on grounds that the administration did not properly go consider the arguments for and against, and did not, and then ordered the administration to kind of give it a good yeoman's try.
Mm-hmm.
And so the administration, that's all they were under orders to do. So they called Mexico and asked Mexico if they'd take them, if they were started returning them again, because this is all reliant on Mexico. And Mexico, wink, wink, said, yeah, no. So, you know, they've kind of given it the yeoman's chance, and, you know, they're doing what they're supposed to in the limited context that they were given. But it's not actually happening. Nobody is being returned to Mexico under that policy.
Well, thank you for the call. We're just 5 seconds here from the break, so we're going to pick up more of your calls right after this in our last segment here. So stay on the line. We'll get to you here momentarily. Todd Bensman with us. A senior national security fellow with the Center for Immigration Studies, and talking about what's happening at the borders right now, from border control to border chaos, and more of your calls here in 1 minute. Thanks for listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. We'll be right back.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Since the November 2020 election, many Americans have been told there's nothing to the voter fraud claims. Reality is, the evidence now is stacking up. I can give a couple examples. One, a recent report by Mesa County, Colorado clerk Tina Peters documents voter fraud, and it documents voter fraud cover-up. She, in her report, shows all the missing files from their county computers after something known as trusted build was put in. She reports with her IT guy, who has worked at the national security level, that the trusted build update deleted many, many of the 2020 voting records that are to be saved for up to 22 months. Now we have the Maricopa County report that came out on Friday. Many believe it showed that Donald Trump lost and Biden won. Reality is, some say he even won by more votes, Biden. Well, that's because they found more fraudulent votes. The American people need to wake up to voter fraud. I'm Brandon House.
For friends, our guest is giving you a first-hand account from the borders. He's been there, and more than once. He's been there on numerous occasions. He's done interviews with the people that are there illegally trying to get into our country here. I mean, they are wanting to get here because they think it's going to be a little better life than what they had in other places. And though they will use the terms asylum, this is not true asylum as we know it in our nation's statutes. Let's go right back to the phone lines. We have Thomas calling in from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Thomas, you're on the air.
I had a question. Most of the focus seems to be on the southern border. My concern is, what do we see in the incidence of people transporting across Canadian border?
Great. Thank you, Tom. Good question.
Well, that's a good question, actually, because you're right. A lot of the attention is on the southern border because that's where just these masses of people are coming over that are requiring all these public resources, and it's controversial. But you're right. The northern border is very porous, but the Canadians have had a pretty effective pandemic-related border closure up there along with us. And so the numbers are, at least since the pandemic broke out, the border's been closed for a lot of months up there. And I'm sure that people are crossing illegally and there's drug running and that sort of thing. But we definitely don't see the kind of numbers up there that we're seeing here. And also I'll mention that a lot of those northern border patrol agents have been shifted because of that to the southern border, just to be able to handle the pressure down here. But, I mean, you have the whole full range of national security threats on that northern border, too. You have people coming down who are jihadists sometimes, and you have drug smugglers, and you also have Mexican cartel people who are traveling. The Trudeau administration recently made it possible for Mexicans to seek asylum in Canada, and they're applying and then crossing over to the United States that way, which is kind of a back way in. So there's a lot of strange stuff happening up there, but it's just not the numbers and the resource suck.
Thank you, Thomas. Appreciate the call. Next to Zach, our next caller, you're in the ear, Zach.
Hi. There's been a lot of talk about Border Patrol agents in Texas, but is there anything going on in Arizona since it's a red state as well? And what about New Mexico and California? I'd assume they're not doing much patrolling or even care since those are, you know, pretty, they're blue states.
Okay. Thanks for the question here.
Every sector on the border is different from every other sector, has its own unique characteristics. And the Arizona and California, the Arizona sector is a major drug trafficking corridor. And there is, and because it's such wilderness and remote territory, the activity there is specialized. And then there are other sectors that have a lot of wall built, and wherever there is walling, there's much less activity. So California, you never hear about California, Tijuana, San Diego, for example, because the wall is there and it's very effective. There's just no mass migration happening there. The mass migration in the huge numbers that we see are happening in South Texas mainly because of the wall gaps that were left in the construction halt. But in El Paso, which is also Texas, a different part, you have a lot of walling, and there's almost no activity there either because of that walling.
Let's go to Nathan in Tigerton. You're on the air.
Yes, I had a question. The immigrants that cross the border and get through and then are allowed to enter the U.S. by given a green card or something like that, are there states that accepts them that they're transferred to, or do they just stay in Texas and stay in Arizona? Because I live in Wisconsin, obviously I don't see a lot of them, but what happens to all them? Where are they dispersed throughout the U.S.?
Thank you, Nathan.
Yeah, that's a good question. States don't really have the right to deny freedom of movement for people who are legal or illegal. So, you know, there isn't anything like that. But to answer your question directly, these immigrants that are being allowed in will process through Border Patrol within usually 48 to 72 hours, and they get on buses, commercial buses, sometimes charter buses, for all four corners of the United States. They're going everywhere. You know, you name it. They're North Dakota, South Dakota, California, Florida, New Jersey, New York, Indiana, all of everywhere. They're just spreading out across the country.
Look, we're going to pick up Jim in Wisconsin. You're on the air.
So what you were just saying, our tax money's paying for these, getting these illegals shipped all over the place and giving them food and housing and all this stuff. Isn't there immigration policies being violated? And if so, isn't the Biden administration culpable for this? Aren't they, shouldn't they be taken to task for breaking our laws?
Yeah, they are breaking the law. The law requires, the INA requires that the administration put all illegally entering immigrants into removal proceedings, meaning they have to be detained and put into deportation proceedings. Now they have options once that happens, but the administration is bypassing all of that. And in the Supreme Court ruling against MPP, the wait in Mexico, Texas, by the way, is suing on all of these grounds and rather successfully. But in that particular piece of litigation, the Supreme Court noted in the majority opinion that the administration did not have legal authority to do what it's doing by just releasing people through. They have to at least run them through removal proceedings, put them through a detention situation, but I'm not seeing that happen yet. I think it will. Maybe they're trying to gear up for it or something, or if they just simply ignore that ruling, then, you know, maybe we're getting close to some kind of constitutional crisis. I don't know.
Well, we have run out of time. We're going to have to leave it there, and I apologize to callers on hold here. More questions than time allows for us here today, but get a lot of your answers at cis.org. Our guest, Todd Benzman, who has also written the book America's Covert Border War. Todd, thanks for being with us here today.
Thank you for having me.
And, folks, we appreciate you joining us on Crosstalk. Keep in mind, legislators are trying to get this passed through in a budget bill as well. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from BCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.